Mary, why do some governments succeed where others fail?
It's a very good and a very important question, and I think about it a lot with my fellow elders. Nelson Mandela brought this group of elders together, and we constantly look at failed states, states in conflict, visit and try to analyze. I also have another reference point which you touched on. I've been on the board and the prize committee of the Mo Ibrahim Foundation since it started. We're in our 10th year. 2016 is our 10th year. And the Ibrahim Index covers 15 years, because we did 2 years at a time. And it covers four main areas. Safety and rule of law, which covers rule of law, accountability, personal safety, and national safety. And then participation in human rights, which covers participation, rights, and gender. Sustainable economic opportunity, which is public management, business environment, infrastructure, and rural sectors. And then human development, which is welfare, education, and health. So it's a broad mix. And what we notice is, first of all, that unfortunately the countries at the bottom of the 54 African countries are countries in conflict. That's very simple. It's very clear, with Somalia at the bottom. Secondly, if countries don't have a good balance between those four, they may be likely to have difficulties. And interestingly, that happened during the Arab Spring. There were strong economic development to some extent, but not participation and rights. And you had the flare-up of the Arab Spring. And we could have predicted it. We didn't, but we could have. Afterwards, when we looked at the data, we said we should have been able to message that.
Now, Jibril, why didn't this region forecast the Arab Spring, if you believe it failed to do so? And how did governments play a part?
Well, first of all, I would like to extend my gratitude and thanks for the invitation. I would say that because of change of paradigm that took place by the end of the 80s, early 90s, we live in a completely new world. Ironically enough, societies all over the world became more globalized, while governments and states, most of them, are getting national. And this is really ironic and funny at the same time. If you look at Europe today, because of the wave of immigration, immigrants, refugees, they are turning nationalistic. And don't rule out that one of the possibilities that fascism and Nazism might come back to Europe in light of this, you know. On the other hand, Arab societies are getting connected because the name of the game in a global world is connectivity. With the new expectations, especially the youth, they have more skills, more expectations, more dreams. The governments face those uprisings with the old tools from the industrial age, whether their security systems, their education systems, their workforce, everything is related to the past. Therefore, you have two options. Governments that do not adapt themselves to this globalized age, they're going to fail. Governments that are not responsive enough to those new dreams of global societies, I would say, a global individual in those societies with those new dreams, they're going to fail. So the name of the game is responsiveness in the past, where more inclusiveness is at heart of everything, and more adaptation and realignment of the global society.
In your experience, why do governments fail?
In my experience, I think that every government fails sometimes and have some success some other time. No government can pretend having only successes. That's part of the life of a government, to try and try again. Of course, success depends very much on the legitimacy that one government may have. If you have, as Mahmoud Jibril mentioned it very rightly, if you have strong institutions coming from history, if you have a very cohesive society, it's, of course, a very strong help, because you can support your work on very, very strong tools. But the legitimacy is the key, because if you are able to put forward a strong vision, long-term vision, with strong institutions, and if you have, you are able to mobilize public consent, then, of course, reforms, adaptations are a lot easier. even a refugee crisis can be solved. But the big problem is you are very often not able to fulfill the demand of the people on a short-term basis, which is what they ask. Look at what happened in Germany, for example. Angela Merkel has been having a very human reaction to the refugee crisis. But of course, problems are there, and problems are not easy to solve. And the numbers are so high. 1 million people coming just in the last year. This is a huge burden for the German society, even if they have faced reunification and have the courage to go for reunification, to face from one day to another 1 million refugees is, of course, a big, big problem. So you cannot have answers on a short-term basis. And it's difficult to explain with the media pressure, with the social networks pressure, very difficult to find answers just in one day, 1 week, 1 month. So it takes time, it takes more legitimacy, and also it takes new tools, because new technologies, new challenges, you need to adapt constantly yourself. So there is not just one answer at the right time. You cannot just say, I have a success today and I will be successful tomorrow. No, you need constantly to change and work harder.
Need more than 40 minutes then to sort it out. Is that what you're telling us? Right, okay. Well, we've only got 40 minutes and we've got less than 30 now. Ms. Eunice, your thoughts?
Yeah, I'd like to move forward rather than go backwards. I think there's an impending danger which will shake all the governments, not just few governments. This is the concentration of wealth. The way the wealth world is moving, the information given to us today, 62 people in the world own more wealth than the bottom half of the population. 6 years back, the number was 388 people owning more than half the wealth of the population. So number is decreasing and wealth is accumulating. Mm-hmm. And we are in the way where one person will own more than half the wealth of the world. This is the direction we're going. Even a presidential candidate in the USA, Bernie Sanders, repeatedly saying 0.1% of US population own 80% of the wealth of the United States. So if you go by country, this will be a threat, because all we talk about human rights, democracy, freedom of speech, or everything will be threatened if we cannot stop this. This is a global consensus is needed, that we cannot allow this concentration to continue. 1% of the population of the world owning 99% of the wealth of the world today. Tomorrow, it will be worse. So that's the danger that we have to see. If we have to protect our governments, if we have to protect our civilization, we cannot allow this to continue.
Whatever the existential pressures or challenges are, Mary, Eunice here pointing out that inequality is something that a government can do something about. What about exclusion, a lack of social justice, a lack of trust, consensus and a collective aim for a country? How do we rate these things and work to look at how you achieve a successful government?
Well, first of all, I do agree with Eunice about the gross inequality, which is worsening. And I think it's really undermining legitimacy and credibility of governments. And I think we have to be conscious of that, and it has to be addressed.
Who's going to address that,
then? Well, I think it has to be addressed country by country, but also at a level of the need to understand that corporate power, when it becomes power to determine who will win elections, and it's close to that now, just the buying of elections, so the intense money being put in to support candidates. Despite all the problems in the United States, at least there is some evidence of a vibrant response by citizens, and I think that's to be welcomed. But back to your point about the inclusiveness, I think we have to remember that basically business was about a social compact. Business got the right to incorporate on the basis of contributing to human welfare, basically. And I think we need to remember that. We need to have gender equality, and I'm very pleased to see constant progress in this region, particularly in the UAE, on that, because that's part of inclusion. Also, you know, LGBT rights, I mean, the gay and lesbian rights. I think these are an important part of generating a real social stability and social contract. I'm reminded a little bit, and we were talking about it earlier, the way in which we got agreement on climate in Paris was because the process was more inclusive. The smallest countries felt they were being listened to, the small island states, the least developed countries, and the target set of well below 2 degrees of warming and striving for 1.5 was a better target than we've had up to now, and will save countries from going underwater, will keep African countries from being so buffeted by drought and flooding that it undermines government.
I suggested at the beginning of this that there are a number of things that governments can't control, but perhaps I should sort of row back on that to a certain extent, because climate change is something governments can control. I want to ask our other panellists just how important you think that is to a successful government in the years ahead. Wars, actually, governments, one single government may not be able to do anything about a war somewhere else, but together they can. But let's just start with, because I think climate change is actually very much in the news, Dominic de Villepin. Your sense of how important that will be as an issue for governments to be successful going forward and the way they deal with it?
I believe that there is a growing awareness of how important it is, because we see everywhere in the planet the consequences. Unfortunately, for very poor countries like Bangladesh, Maldives, they are facing huge challenges. But in every country, the US, in Europe, we see every day the consequences of climate change. So I believe there is a growing awareness. COP21 in Paris was an important momentum of this awareness, but there is so much to be done. And the problem is, how are we going to be organized in a way to have fruitful agreements and to keep the promises that are being made today? For that, we need objectives, very clear objectives. Each country has to contribute. Everyone has to be part of the venture. Rich country, less rich country, and poor countries, because that's really something that is going to help us understand that we have only one planet and that we cannot change this planet. So this is a link between countries. It's also a link between generations. And I believe that young people today are very much aware of the consequences of climate change.
Provide us some solutions.
Well, I would go at two levels. You know, strategically, at the national level, for any government, it should start by positioning its economy within the context of a global economy to discover the competitive edge for that economy. The moment it discovers the competitive edge, it has an identity for that economy. The moment that has been done, all the other subsystems should be reconstructed, re-engineering. For instance, education. We have moved drastically from access to knowledge to the management of knowledge. And today, there isn't a single university, not only in the region, worldwide, that teaches management of knowledge. For any government today, 5 skills are very much needed. Management of complexity, management of creativity and innovation, management of uncertainty, management of flow of information, and management of diversity.
Yes, I did. Because I feel that human beings are the most important resource besides what you are talking, we mentioned. We focus on the young people particularly. This new generation of young people has a lot more potential than we ever had before because of the access to technology. A 5-year-old today is more technologically oriented than a 50-year-old today, and this will get more and more like that. So there'll be a mismatch between the government and the young generation.
One of the most important solutions is connecting hearts and minds. This is the theme of Dubai Expo 2020. This is one of the most difficult goals for any government. When I was Prime Minister, I wanted to push innovation in France. because I knew that we had a lot of capabilities, a lot of good companies, a lot of good universities, but they were not connected together. So I invented a concept which were centers of competitiveness all over France. Every region, every small region was having a center in which companies were connected with universities, with experts, and everybody working together. Young students, innovative ideas. So all the country was participating to one big goal. And I think at the end of the day, what makes a young person stay in his country or come back to his country is being proud of being a citizen of this country, being aware of the importance of participating. That's why I believe leadership is so important. Leadership is just trying to find 2, 3, 4, 5 objectives which are going to be shared by the whole population and which is going to make them pride to be part of.
We'd be remiss if we didn't talk about what is going on in this region, particularly the problems of Syria, the problems of Libya and Iraq, the problems of Yemen, the scourge that is ISIS. So it's a tough region at present. What do governments need to do here to ensure success in the face of such challenges?
First of all, I would argue that what took place in the 5 cases you just mentioned was a result of the Arab international order which came out of World War II, you know. I would say that most of Arab states have failed miserably in both fields, development and national integration. You know, most of Arab societies are mosaic societies, composed, demographically speaking, either in terms of ethnic groups, in terms of sects, in terms of tribes, you know. So most of those regimes which have witnessed the Arab Spring discovered that maybe tribes and sects and ethnicity can be used as a security tool for the regime by playing tribes against each other. So when the state fell down during those uprisings, now the sub-nations came out. Tribe became the name of the game, sect became the name of the game, and in societies like Libya, where we have arms all over the place, this is a recipe for a civil war, you know. The other field where the Arab state, or most of them, have failed, the issue of development, especially education. We did not teach our kids the right knowledge. Today, the name of the game is speed. Knowledge is changing so fast. So we need a new schools, a new universities that can cope with this speedy change. Those who prevail are those who are going to be very fast, not those who are very strong.
One of the big problems that I see is a massive one, runs across everything, whether you talk about the Middle East or the region, this region, other region. We build the whole economy of the world in one structure, which is selfishness driven. So selfishness runs through everything that we do. Human beings have been interpreted in such a distorted way that human beings converted into a selfish being. But the real human beings are not selfish. That's the exciting thing about us. If we can move from the selfishness-driven economy to human value-driven economy, the selfishness and selflessness, all these problems will become in a very different perspective.
Briefly, do you institutionalize that? Do you institutionalize, I mean, do you make part of a government's remit a social business?
That's right, that's what I'm coming to. So there's the kind
awareness
of thing, the human beings can run both kind of businesses. Profit-driven, profit-maximizing businesses, also social businesses. Business exclusively to solve human problems without having any intention of making any penny out of it, as a profit. It's possible. It's up to, if you have it inside, it will be expressed. But the textbook doesn't allow you to do that. I said, why don't you accommodate that into the textbook? Let people decide. Capitalist system is all about giving options to people. But when it comes to business, they don't give you option. You have to make money. So we are all making money. And so entrenched in that, we became greedy. We became accumulation of all the wealth because we want to excel in everything. That's the kind of outburst of a thing that we have distorted in us. Why don't you open it up? Give people choice so that we can, as an individual, particularly young people, love this idea that, yes, I can be an instrument. My life can be of some help in changing the world. Give them a chance. Just changing, only thing you have to do is to accommodate this concept into the business world. Social business as a part of the business world. That's all.
Food for thought. And the last word from your guests today, Mohammed Yunus, Mahmoud Jibril, Dominic de Villepin, and Mary Robinson. I hope you've enjoyed it as much as I have, and thank you very much indeed.